Good day, everyone. Welcome back to the Powerhouse Perspective, empowering leaders for business breakthroughs. As you know, I am Scott Medeiros, the president of HelmWise, and this is Chandler Rose, the CEO of the Rosewood family of companies. Today's topic is probably one of my favorites. Chandler and I have been known to debate several topics every now and then. And in fact, I was just having this discussion yesterday with some of our team members. And today's topic is about standards and, more importantly, accountability. As leaders, captains of your business, captains of your ship, you're going to deal with accountability quite frequently. And often we interchange accountability and responsibility. And they are related, but they are different as well. So let's have a discussion about accountability today and see where this journey takes us. So Chandler, I mentioned the difference between accountability and responsibility. Which of the two words do you find yourself using most frequently?
Probably accountability.
Accountability?
Yeah, I definitely think that the buck stops here. It's kind of the accountability standard to me.
Harry Truman, yes.
So where does the buck stop? And that's who's accountable for the immediate. But if you're responsible for the overall success, it does get confusing. And maybe you can shed some light on the kind of how that plays out in the project management world versus maybe common knowledge or vernacular.
Yeah, absolutely. So responsibility, if we look at the difference between the two words, responsibility versus accountability, responsibility is really in the present, what you're doing right now. You are responsible. You're responsible for that particular task, responsible for that deliverable. Whereas accountability tends to be more oriented around the outcome or the result. So a little bit more into what happened, almost past oriented. And were you accountable for the things that happened that before you were responsible for? And for me, I use accountability a lot. I use it a lot because of the Marine Corps. But I also think that I've skewed it quite a bit. And you know, we're talking later on today on a different event about the dichotomy of leadership by Jocko Willink. And for me, I tend to go on both extremes of accountability. I tend to either be very, very hard in holding people accountable, or I tend to kind of just turn the other way a little bit and allow some things to happen. But in reality, there's that scale, right? There's times to be hard and there's times to loosen up a little bit and allow people some grace when mistakes are made. So for you, when you look across the Rosewood family of companies, where do you put accountability? Is it on a scale or is it about setting a standard and holding the people to that particular expectation?
I'll probably give you a lawyer / political answer.
Love
to
it.
That one.
Love it. This is what we debate things all the time.
It's definitely a both and. And so it's kind of similar to the discussion on core values, so whether they're a threshold level core value. So they're threshold level, of course, standards that you must hold. And so, you know, barring a exception that we find, you know, acceptable, that standard must be met. But then there also is the scale. And everyone, I hope that you understand when Scott and I talk about the scale and moving side to side, I hope you never take away from our podcast that there is a right answer. That is just not accurate in life, and I wish it was. It worked much better, which Scott, I'm sure, will get into. When you're in the Marines, you have a structure, you have a clear objective, you have clear responsibilities, and you kind of control the environment, even though it's certainly meets its limit, obviously, as Jocko figured out, as you move up enough into leadership roles or autonomous enough, that changes a little bit. Certainly modern warfare, they talk about how different that is, fluid battlefields and things. But, you know, in business, you need both. And so it makes it hard. Everyone wants to grasp either very clear accountability and responsibility, or my boss is too laid back and it's not clear.
100% correct.
The other side, again, to continue to give you kind of non-answers, is on the receiving end, what I think you and I both have found is a desire to use the gray or that fluid motion of when you need to apply more rigid rules versus giving some freedom. A lot of leaders prefer the gray area because it allows them to hide and make an excuse on either side.
Yes.
It wasn't clear enough.
Yes.
You know, or it was too rigid so I couldn't adjust with the situation. I did what you told me. Why are you upset with me? And so I think this is where you get into some of the later topics I'm sure we'll get into, is actual ownership and are you taking ultimate responsibility, not just for, you know, and maybe that does roll in ultimate to accountability, but, you know, there's no clear answer. There's certainly areas that you can cover, and I'd love to hear from you, that are just, you know, must-haves, the thresholds, admittance to the party, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. Spirit of excellence is our standard here on what we expect for as delivery of anything that we produce or any service we provide. But even that is spirit of excellence within the situation that you're in. It must be realistic because, you know, not every client pays enough to have the best project management, the best finished product. You can't pay for a Cadillac and complain you didn't get a Rolls Royce. I'm sure they will, but in reality, you've got to be wise enough to go, hold on, this is the field we're on. Here's the level we must set that is still what we consider excellence. And so that's a tough thing to do as you move up into the decision-making role of you're trying to set a standard that is fluid, that is subject to reality.
Right.
And it puts gray in there, and that gray, you know, causes the need to kind of oscillate your scales, kind of, you know, hey, we got to lean very hard on clear expectations and demands of reality. Come in and want to smack that around a little bit. So tell me how you've weighed that out. We've certainly had a lot of discussions on it over the years. So.
Yeah, a couple of things there. You talked about sort of the gray area. And I think a lot of people like to play in that area because if I'm in the gray, then yeah, I can lean a little bit over here towards more accountable or a little bit less because I want to give some grace. And for me, one of the things that I've read that really helps define where is that line, you know, where does the gray turn into black and white, was a book called The Oz Principle. And it was written by a gentleman called Roger Connors and other authors. So I'll say Roger Connors et al. In that particular book. But what he talks about the line. Mm-hmm. And you got above the line and you got below the line. And when he speaks about below the line, which he characterizes really as kind of a victim mentality, are all those areas where people are making excuses. Well, you didn't tell me, right? So you can't hold me accountable. Well, you're making that excuse that you're claiming that you were confused or you weren't aware or you didn't have the foresight to do what was necessary or it's not my job, right? Wait a minute, I have a job description here. It says these things that I'm supposed to do and this isn't on it. Therefore, you can't hold me accountable. So anytime that we start getting into this excuse area, then you start falling below the line. And to me, you're getting further and further away from accountability than towards accountability. And then on the opposite side, above the line thinking is what you talked about earlier, which is about ownership, really. And there are these, what Roger Connors and those and the authors of Oz Principle will talk about are these steps to accountability. And there are four steps and we can perhaps get into those. But really it's where is that line? And if you're allowing that line to go up and down to oscillate, then it's going to be really difficult to give people the clarity they need to know when they're operating above the line or below the line. And I think we as captains of our businesses, we need to define that line. And part of it is through the value system that you talked about. These things, this is what we expect. And if you're not operating in accordance with those policies, those standards, those values, then you are not being accountable, or you're not taking accountability, which is something we'll get into a little bit later.
Yeah, I think the values is a great point. At least here, you know, we go through the spirit of excellence, we before me, do the right thing, grace through generosity, and innovate to elevate. And so what we tell people and try to emphasize, maybe not as well as we should, is, you know, the outcomes hopefully fall on the winning side more often than not. Otherwise, you'll go out of business. But the reality is, as long as you are walking your decisions through the circumstances, through sound business principles, through the values, you must make a choice and own it, which is really your point. And when you do that, then I think you're above the line every time. When you try to sneak around one of the values or ignore one of the realities that's a fundamental principle of business, then you're, you know, arguably to me below the line, either in your aptitude or your willingness to blame it on others, CYA, all the things you pointed out of, you know, oh, we'll wait and see. And so I think that if you're truly thinking of we before me, including your customer, including your employees, their future jobs and future of the business, you're going to look to the future and you're going to be able to really consider weighing out the pros and cons of decisions. And so if you don't have a good value structure to guide your decision making and you don't have a structure that requires you, similar to the Helm-Wise methodology, to examine yourself and your business and fundamentals of business and your team, then you're subject to me to really need to own the blame it is your fault at that point. And if you don't have the capability to honestly assess all those things and ask for help and be, you know, one of ours and do the right thing, is transparent accountability. So if it is gray, or you don't know the situation, or you're uncertain,
yes,
reach out and ask questions. You know, the gray is still your responsibility, and you will ultimately be accountable. So both in the real time, you're responsible, and to your point, and in the outcome, you're accountable. To me, it's not an excuse that I didn't know or I was unsure. The question is, did you seek help and seek others and seek guidance to clear up that gray and to make a decision that, again, is aligned with the values and aligned with the outcomes that you have promised the client and what you owe the business and the employees around you?
What a great point, because as you were speaking, a lot of things came to mind, because you spoke about the values and you spoke about what the expectation is and transparent accountability and those things. And what caused me to think is, well, why don't people want accountability, right? What are they afraid of? What is the environment that has been created that wants them to shirk responsibility or to come up and find the excuses, to operate below the line, to become the victim? And a lot of that comes down to the culture and to the values. Because we would believe that if a company has a healthy culture, it's organizationally healthy, as Patrick Lencioni would say, then part of that is trust. And part of that trust comes understanding. And part of understanding comes grace. And grace through generosity is one of our values. So it's curious as to why people are afraid to take accountability, right? What has the environment that's been created within or on your ship that the crew is going and trying to hide at different places on the deck rather than stepping forward and taking accountability for something that may or may not have happened? And so it's interesting. And I'm a bit curious as to how do we solve that problem as well? Because unless we create the right environment, accountability is going to be higher and higher. Because if the environment is not there, especially those who aren't used to or maybe didn't grow up in a very accountable household, it's going to be difficult. For those who did, it's easy. It's like, oh, what are you talking about? How come you are showing up late? No one does that. Where, you know, you've got to create the right environment. So what have you done perhaps here at Rosewood, or what have you done over the years that gets you more into that accountability-minded culture versus those who are trying to avoid it?
Again, it goes back to my last comment, is we try to set the standard, oddly enough, not exactly on the outcome. Mm. It's the process in which you arrived at the decision that led you to make the decision that was most likely to lead to the positive outcome. And so this, you know, when you talk about maybe how things have changed or society or what people bring to the table, even the books that Scott is an expert in, you know, one of the reasons he's constantly trying to kind of draw red threads, as we call it, throughout the books and take principles from all the different ones, is the realization that every one of them says, if you do it this way, it'll work. Yeah. And so we're constantly pounding home to leaders that if you just read XYZ book and you did 1, 2, 3 steps,
just follow the Oz principle,
you just follow the rules and it'll be right. And so there is this very strong pressure and belief that is driven home every day that there is a right answer. And the reality is, you know, maybe. And then as we speak about some in other settings, you can never step in the same river twice. It came up at one of our cohorts that, you know, was a good quote. The reality is, even if it worked yesterday, it's not necessarily going to work today. And so, you know, I think both of those really are hard to overcome, no matter how much trust you try to build in the atmosphere around the business. It is ingrained, and I think it is a willingness to fail more than it is a culture. And so you got to try to create the culture, but the leader has got to be willing to fail and willing to own failure. Otherwise, I just don't see how they will pivot. And we have certainly had some failures and some successes, but I would say that, to me, humility followed, which really goes into that same category, but right behind that, if you're not willing to fail and be transparent make attempts, you're going to either be too afraid to make the right decision or too afraid to reach out and get clarity, and you're eventually going to miss the mark. Even if it works once or twice, you just can't control the environment enough to operate that way. So that's my biggest kind of vision. But I think that the, you know, walking through that Oz metaphor, maybe you can give the examples in there on accountability, and maybe that'll shed a little more light around this topic. But
actually, it's a great segue, because what you were talking about were, rewarding is not the right word, but evaluating the thought process, right? And finding out where maybe perhaps the thought process failed or could have been better, learning from that so that one obviously improves as time goes on, learns through experience, gains wisdom, call it that way. But in the Oz principle, when we talk about operating above the line, and the reason it's called the Oz principle is the author took the Wizard of Oz and used the characters in the Wizard of Oz to try to reinforce or use a metaphor to for each of the, what he calls the steps to accountability. And the first step in accountability, per the Oz principle, is to actually see the fact that you have to be accountable, right? And so he uses the cowardly lion. You got to have the courage to see that perhaps you didn't perform to standard. The courage to see that I need to step in and have a difficult conversation with someone. And so the first step to accountability is having that courage to see and to take action, right? And that's going to lead you to actually delivering against the accountability. You know, the next step, once you see it, is then you want to own it. All right, I see it. Seeing it and owning it are two completely different things, right? It's sort of like, hey, I see that candy wrapper on the floor, but then owning to go across the room to pick it up and then put it in the trash can is something completely different. So even though you have the courage to see it, to acknowledge it, that, hey, something needs to be done, that's different than taking ownership of it. And that ownership part of it, he talks and relates to in the Oz principle, to the Tin Man. You got to have the heart, right? You got to care. We talk a lot about caring here on the podcast and obviously in our cohorts. But you've got to care enough, right, to own it, to want to put yourself perhaps under judgment and to actually make an improvement to lead yourself towards above-the-line thinking. So the second step is ownership. And ownership, I know we've talked about that in different contexts, but maybe perhaps a little word or two on how you've seen that or where you've taken ownership or others haven't taken ownership and that's caused problems.
I think ownership is, I think that we spend a lot of time distinguishing it from stewardship. And so ownership is the buzzword, again, that gets thrown around a lot. I don't think that it is enough motivation. If you think of what will get you out of bed, certainly you want to lose weight, you want to work out. But if you had a child that was sick and you needed to get up and go to your job to take care of that child, the level of dedication between those two is pretty dramatic. Mm. You know, doing it for yourself versus doing it for someone you love or something you care about, I would say that, you know,
I actually expect people to get a little above ownership and more to stewardship mindset, because there are plenty of times where,
you know, you may see it, you may personally own it, you may want to solve it, which was kind of the scarecrow version he threw out in there. And then, like Dorothy, you might be willing to go do it. That doesn't mean that you've taken the time to inform your team, prepare your company, share the knowledge with them, and bring them along. That means you, as an individual, may do it. And as a leader, you still have not succeeded if you haven't brought your people up with you. And so I think as a steward of the business and the people, you'll take the extra time to bring them along, and you'll take the extra effort for something outside of you. I would just argue you'll do more for something outside of you than you will for yourself. And so I think that's been shown over and over again in history and over again in a lot of extreme situations, that if it's just about you, you know what? I've had enough. But if it's, you know what? If I had enough, that means these people I care about are going to fail, or this thing that I care about is going to fail, then I'll probably go one more step, one more inch towards that goal. So I do push a little bit. So I would say the accountability ownership statements move a little bit more towards being accountable as a steward. And I think that raises the bar quite a bit from owner.
Yeah, I agree. And something you mentioned was about this need for communication. And even if I think back to the Oz principle, so the four steps to accountability are to see it, to own it, to solve it, to do something about it, and then physically do it. And those are the four steps to accountability. But what is not in those steps, at least not explicitly in those steps, is this need to communicate. Mm-hmm. And as you mentioned, if that communication is not happening, if you're not bringing the crew along, if you're not showing where the standard was violated or wasn't met, or in those cases where the standard was met, the person did the right thing. You know, the maybe outcome, the result, yeah. The outcome may have not been what we wanted, but they went through the process. They took accountability. They were being responsible in real time. And then it just didn't work out. Okay, that happens, right? It's an imperfect world. But that fact of communication, I think, is always there. It's one of the red threads. I think every book that I've read, especially around leadership and management and trying to develop a very high-performance culture, has had this aspect of communication through it. It has to. And we also have to realize that communication isn't just verbal. We tend to think that communication is just that. We've got to have a meeting. We've got to hold a podcast. We've got to do those sort of things. Well, sometimes communication is by what you physically do, what you demonstrate, what you model, modeling the way. But that point about communication, very, very good. And actually, like I said, it's probably infused in the Oz principle, but it isn't called out as a particular step within the four steps of accountability.
All right. Well, there's a few quotes on here, and I'm going to give you, I'm going to give you rapid fire, or you want to give me rapid fire? One answer, one sentence response. You want to quiz me, or am I quizzing you?
I don't know if this should be a quiz. I don't know if this is accountability or responsibility at this point. But I put down several quotes here. One of them, it comes back to Roger Connor, so it's the second one. And it says, what else can I do to operate above the line and achieve the desired results? And so that statement is an ownership statement. What else can I do, right? What can I do? I take ownership. It's not something that has been given to me. It's something I have taken in order to make things much more successful when it comes to the desired results. But I got a Drucker one down there that I think you may like.
What can I contribute that will significantly affect the performance and the results of the institution I serve? Peter F. Drucker, the effective executive.
Exactly right.
Summarize it in two sentences, Scott. It's a challenge.
Yes, it's all about me. It's about me taking action to help the organization. So when I say it's about me, not me as in a selfish, ego-centered way, but it's meaning it's on me to generate the action, to take ownership, as we spoke about earlier, to follow the steps of accountability to move the organization forward. It's no one else. It isn't like Chandler didn't tell me to do something, so I'm good to go. No, it's I have to take that ownership action to move things forward.
The third one you have here, I'll let you fire back because I think it does transition slightly into what we were speaking of earlier. So,
yeah, another great book, I've mentioned it, I think, a few times on the podcast, is The One Thing. It's written by a gentleman called Gary Keller. And in The One Thing, actually, the definition of The One Thing is, what's the one thing that I can do this week such that by doing it, everything else would be easier or unnecessary? So that's all about leverage. Right? We spoke a little bit about this at one of our executive meetings yesterday. You know, what is that leverage point? What's that first domino? So if we set everything in motion and we hit that first domino, the flywheel, going back to Jim Collins that we've talked many times about here on the podcast, what is that? So yeah, your view of the one thing.
The one thing opens the door to me to, again, back to the humility in the team. So the question prior to the one thing is, how do you discover it? And so if you're not looking at the past, looking at current surroundings, looking at the future, and including other perspectives from your team, then to me, you're operating on quite a bit of arrogance or ignorance, one of the two, of, you know what, I know what lever to pull solely as the leader.
Yeah.
And I think that ignores your we before me, certainly your do the right thing here of transparent accountability, including the team, respecting other ideas. So it violates several of ours because respect is under our spirit of excellence. So I do think that dovetailing from the what can I contribute, mm-hmm. and then what is the one thing I can do, mm-hmm. I don't think you land on that one thing and how to contribute unless you, at least wisely, unless you include your team in the discussion and some diverse opinions, because otherwise I would challenge you, if you're that smart, why haven't you already done it?
Yeah, absolutely right.
Well, so to me it seems kind of natural, but I know we want to fix it. you know, most leaders are type A. They want to own it. They want to fix it. They want to grab it. At least we hope, the ones that aren't trying to operate in the gray. But I would caution here that the proper, wise way to do it is a little bit of self-reflection of, if you already knew that one thing so clearly, why haven't you already done it?
Why haven't you already done it?
So,
yeah, great point. And if I try to tie it back to the Oz principle, I probably would tie it back to the solve it step of accountability. Because solving it doesn't mean that you have to solve it. You're the sole individual who is accountable, who has to make things right or make the improvement or deliver against the result or outcome. But it is your responsibility to find those who can help, right? Maybe you are not the best. Maybe you don't see things in the right way. Those diverse opinions are very, very important. And so, wow, I mean, that's a great one, because like you said, all of these are geared towards the I, but we shouldn't automatically assume that all the responsibility falls on the shoulders of the individual, the leader. In reality, they are accountable to rally the team, to get the new information, to find their blind spots. That's probably part of accountability too, that self-awareness. You got to be accountable for where the areas that maybe you can't see. And wow, that's a great point. That's a great point.
Yeah, it goes to the situational awareness, and it goes to, you know, to your point, finding the solution we're going to pursue. And so if you do that only from your perspective, again, that's a mighty confident view of yourself, either that or potentially an ignorant, arrogant one. But either way, I don't see that as a wise way to lead a business or to lead even an organizational change or a department or even something as small as a specific small project. There's a reason to have a quick huddle, a quick discussion, and fix it. So.
Wow. Yeah, that's powerful. That's powerful. The next one that I have down here, which obviously I got to put a Jocko Willink quote in here. So this comes from Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink. And he says, if substandard performance is accepted, if no one is held accountable, if there are no consequences, then poor performance becomes the new standard. And this is one where I think we have a short memory sometimes, because we see the situation as it currently is, but we don't think about all the things that we did to set up these dominoes that have now fallen in place. And suddenly we're upset because things aren't going the way we expect. The standard isn't being held. But what we've done over time is we've allowed the bar, the standard, to fall. And now we are now reaping what we sowed, going back to a different podcast. And so I think that concept of standard is a big one, at least for me, coming from a military standpoint. And it comes to, you know, also expectations. If you don't set the standard, or more importantly, if you don't establish the expectation, then what are people measuring themselves against, right? How can you say you did or did not do something, holding someone accountable, when they never knew what the standard was anyways? We could say, well, you should have known, right? And we could say, well, if you truly were taking accountability, you would have foreseen all of these things. Those are the excuses. You're now operating below the line. You're making all these excuses because, in fact, you did not set the expectation as the leader, or the standard wasn't defined, or it wasn't communicated, and therefore you allowed the standard to erode. Situations where perhaps you've seen that, or...
Often. I've certainly done it myself quite a bit. I mean, it's an easy thing. Some out of just, I think in reality out of convenience. Some of it because when you hold that standard, that responsibility is probably getting ready to land on you. You hold someone accountable. There's also situations realistically where a warm body is necessary and timing is not right. And the whole cut your nose off to spite your face type of thing certainly comes into the debate that you and I have had many times of when do you actually hold that standard, since this isn't going out in the public and is a private podcast, I think that a secondary list, to be blunt, is 100% acceptable. And what I mean is there are people that are not living out in exact accordance. Now, they can't be a complete negative because that means you have to act immediately. So there's some that just trip a trigger, stealing, doing things that are just completely out of bounds. But there are people that go on the list that are on the naughty list for sure. And so when the situation arises or a better option comes, then you make the move to change it. And I think that's just the reality of business. Again, that is weighed out by the detrimental outcome they could potentially lead to. coming from a Jocko or military, lives are at stake, covering someone's back, having the rations, having the ammunition, not keeping up to pace, you know, when you're doing movements through the mountains or wherever, I mean, people will die. So the standard is pretty much a zero excuse standard at that point. Mm-hmm. You know, in business where we have more time to consider, you know, what is the saying when you were in the Marines, if they wanted a family, they would have issued you one.
Exactly so, right. Yes.
That's a lot different than the reality of business and the push, which I think is appropriate for the most part to bring your whole self to work, because it is naive to think we're going to be able to carve out in work life like you request soldiers to do when they carve out life when they go on deployment. And I don't, so I think that's different. And certainly, you know, it is an ongoing discussion, but I think communication is big here. So there's a difference in immediately terminating someone not meeting standard versus communicating they're not meeting the standard. So there's a gradient there even within that.
Absolutely correct.
If you just turned a blind eye, you know, occasionally it's a situation where that's got to happen, but most of the time you need to communicate directly that, hey, this is not up to par. You're going to have to figure this out, you know. There's just some reality of business sometimes that comes in. I know that's contrary to most books, but.
No, I mean, you bring up a great point. And I think that we as leaders get ourselves into that conundrum because we didn't hold ourselves accountability when we first saw.
I do agree with that.
Going back to the very first steps, see it in the steps to accountability, is you see that performance waning a little bit, or you see the fact that that person isn't thinking in the way that you want them to think in accordance with our values, et cetera. But at that time, we decided, nah, I'm going to wait.
Well, your point brings up the Way of the Shepherd that we both have liked, and it's a short book if people haven't read that, but talks a little bit about the shepherd's staff.
Yes.
And so the kind of the gentle correction. So if you're out there, and this is certainly an area where I struggle somewhat, is they're constantly in with the sheep and up front early, gently going, hey, that's a little out of bounds, or you got to keep this. Then you won't get so far out where you got to take the other side and kind of whack them over the head to get them to move back where they need to go.
Yes.
And so to your point, I think it is never the straw that broke the camel's back, which comes to mind. It's all the things that led up to the breaking point.
Yes.
And that is probably more of the failure that leads to this decision that you want to make that you can't make. You should have probably been involved much earlier with some guidance, communication, mentoring, coaching, whatever needed to be, correction.
Well, and I think there's a good opportunity there, right? Let's say a leader does find themselves in a situation where they got an underperforming employee, member of their crew, and they didn't do the things they should have done. Well, now, if you truly are going to hold yourself accountable, you're going to admit that. You're going to bring the person saying, say, look, there have been some things I've let slide. It's on me. So here we're going to set a 30, 60, 90 in place and have that discussion from that point forward, right? So you still can correct it. It isn't as if you lost the opportunity and then now you can't do it. Now you got to have this crazy reaction to things versus responding. You still can respond. You still can take accountability for the fact you didn't do the things you should have done before. Exactly. And then, you know, make those statements and then set it back on the path again and hopefully it comes to a more, at least agreeable resolution.
Yeah, I think that leads right into your high road leadership.
Yes, John Maxwell.
And the first one is whether you are accountable passively or actively. And passively is exactly, I really screwed that up. Versus actively going out, speaking directly to the individual you failed to lead, laying out what happened and actively pursuing a solution, or at least actively pursuing a better solution to a problem you may have created by not being diligent, not being out there with your team constantly. And again, I would say this is an area where it's not the active versus passive so much, but being out with the team on a day-to-day basis is probably one of my biggest weaknesses when I run through. If you recall, when I read Way of the Shepherd, I immediately came to Scott and said, oh, this whole spending time with the flock is, if the flock comes to me, I'm happy
to
help them.
The shape of the flock, yes.
Yeah, I'm happy to help our employees. They come to me. I'm not so good at leaving my office, going out, and actively being alongside and discussing with them what's going on. And so, again, it's an area where you have to reflect and spend some time.
Yeah, you're not alone in doing that as well. You know, I think back to many things that I got frustrated with, and it's because I didn't get out and do the things I should have done. And now I started operating below the line. I started making excuses. Well, why didn't they just do this? Why should I have to remind them, right? Well, did I care enough, going back to the ownership piece of it and the Tin Man and the Oz principle, did I care enough to make those steps, right? And to take accountability at the time to make sure things were going to go the way.
Well, that's the second, you know, point really of the high road leadership is, yeah, are you consistently demonstrating responsibility and ownership? And so I think that's where we're talking about. You may consistently hold them accountable to the outcome, but are you consistently holding yourself accountable to all the things that led to the outcome? And that's a big difference. A lot of people, and like I said, my knee jerk is, you know, I'll manage how they perform, not manage helping them perform. And that's I think a big mistake, and certainly an area most leaders can spend some time on.
Well, what you mentioned there about, and so the book we're talking about is High Road Leadership by John C. Maxwell. Very, very good book. Highly recommend it to all of our podcast listeners. But you talked about in that book, and in chapter 9 specifically, where he says take accountability for your actions. He talks about this need to demonstrate responsibility and accountability. But the key word I thought was great in there, yet imperfectly. Knowing that you're not going to be perfect. Knowing you're going to make mistakes. Knowing that it's not going to be, you know, batting 1,000 all the time. And that goes back to the example we're talking about previously. If you made a mistake, then be accountable to the fact you made a mistake. That's okay, right? In fact, you probably gain more credibility and more connection with the people around you and the people that you're working with if you show that you've got that human side. Now, at the same time, you can't suddenly make everything an exception, because now you're just trying to do a little bit of both of a CYA as well as trying to preach accountability and not walk accountability. So encouraging thing there. Yeah, because John says it's not a one-time occurrence, right? It isn't like I'm accountable today and that's it. I'm done. I got my accountability check in the box. It's an ongoing thing, right? And either you're accountable or you're not in that given situation at that given time. It's a one or a zero. Either you did what you should do to be accountable. And he talks about a difference between being accountable and taking accountability. He believes taking accountability is the best way to use the word, because it shows intentionality, it shows action, it shows intention or ownership. And so let's see it that way. But that actually, the ones beneath that are from a different podcast, I think. Oh, no, they're not. So he talks about personal accountability, Chandler, in two words that we've mentioned quite frequently on this podcast. And it's actually part of our state of the captain of our cohort, which he says, you know, accountability has pieces. And the first piece is personal accountability. And he equates it to two words, humility and honesty. So we've talked a lot about humility. How does that honesty piece come fold into accountability, in your opinion?
The honesty is, there's a lot that's been said over lots of types of books, from religion to leadership to everything else, on honesty. And honesty to me is owning, did you make your best effort in that situation? And so I think you can, with humility, look at yourself and go, am I capable? You know, here are my strengths and weaknesses. There's some things you can do there. But at the end of the day, you still must have a gut check reaction and say, did I do all I could do? Again, I very much caution people to say, given the circumstances, all you can do, because there are other, you know, life is not a vacuum.
Yeah.
And so all you could do while your child is sick, all you could do while there are other responsibilities, all you could do, you know, given the constraints of, you know, the great resignation a few years ago, inflation, all the things that have gone up, COVID, remote work, there's a bazillion things that come in that you can't possibly own all of. But I think honestly, looking back and feeling in your gut, did I actually do the things precedent, the things prior, or not? And that's where I think it really drives change in you as the individual. Mm-hmm. So I do think you can take a humble, you know, list of pros and cons.
Right, right.
Positive. And it's most people, to be honest, don't do that. But I think even past that, even given those, because it's easy to then use those as a crutch and excuse. Well, I'm just not that good at, you know, it was project management. I didn't have Scott around to help me make sure my plan was set up in a rail or whatever else. The reality is, given that, did you actually do all the things you could do? And I think that's where, because When you start lying to yourself, yeah. I've said this many times.
Just going to say that. Well done.
If you're willing to lie to yourself, trust will be out the window. Because if you lie to yourself, you'll lie to everyone else. And every excuse and every blame game, living below the line, is an automatic. And so that's where I would take honesty as opposed to humility. Sort of humility is being humble enough to take an inventory. Honesty is to be humble enough to say, did I put in the effort to offset the reality or the weaknesses that are there? Mm-hmm. And I think they are distinct. So I would certainly agree with Maxwell on that.
Yeah, the two H's.
Humility, two H's, I agree.
Humility and honesty.
Team accountability, Scott. Accountability, I know you like this one.
I like this one, but I also find it a bit of a dichotomy. Mm-hmm. Because we just came off of speaking about it's going to be imperfect. And the fact that, hey, we're going to be perfect, or not perfect, but we're going to be hold ourselves really well in account at times, and sometimes we won't. But when it comes to team accountability, at least when John Maxwell talks about it in High Road Leadership, I read it as more of a one or a zero. And what he says is that when it comes to a team and being accountable to a team, you're either accountable all the time or you're not at all. It was a one or a zero. So either the team can count on you or the team can't count on you. And so I found it almost, like I said, a bit of a dichotomy. I had this, wait a minute, everything can be imperfect. There's a little bit of grayness in there. And then the very next section of that particular book I read, wait a minute, it's a one or a zero between team accountability. But I do believe in that. And I believe in that probably comes from my military background because, you know, as an aviator, you've got to depend upon your wingmen. They've got to be where they need to be at the right time. Everyone can go back to the 1986 movie Top Gun, right? I'm not leaving my wingman. And it's reality because you are depending upon that wingman for your safety and security. And vice versa, he's going to depend on you for his safety or security or her safety or security. So when it comes to the team must be able to count on you. And the only way that the team can do that is if you hold yourself accountable to the team. If you take accountability that, no, this is what I'm supposed to do. This is where I'm supposed to be. It kind of goes into, you know, a captain and leadership and stewardship and some of the other things. But I think when it comes to a team, man, there's nothing worse than being let down by a teammate, you know, and you're left holding the bag.
Betrayal,
yeah. You show up for a 10-person job and there's two people there. You're like, okay.
I've done that overnight in South Texas on the border.
There you go, right?
Going to visit a job and then right. No one shows up and the poor lead and a few people that did show up
there
are standing
go.
There wanting to execute a project with no help to do it.
So. There you go. So I think when it comes to team accountability, you know, all the time or none of the time, as John would say in High Road Leadership, I agree with it, but it's very, very difficult to do. I think that's harder to be accountable to a team than it is to be accountable to yourself.
Well, certainly you have to vocalize it and demonstrate it and make yourself subject to their opinions.
Right.
Real time if you're doing it in person.
Right.
I do think there's a little bit of a split there, though. I would say that maybe that's where you're having some consternation or questioning, because I think the outcome is a fact. And so you must own the outcome.
Mm.
And that's a black or white. The outcome was either good or bad, succeeded or didn't succeed, or at least made forward progress toward success or did not. And I think you can own that and own what contributed to it. I do think that's a little different than saying, well, Scott, if you had done 1, 2, or 3, I think you can own that in a summation of the whole. It makes no difference whether I want to give you grace through generosity, grace on, you know, your situation, or we made the best effort, we followed the values, we did everything, we made a wise decision, we all consulted one another, we all had ownership and treated it as stewards, but the outcome still didn't achieve the goal. And I do think once you get to the actual results, just like the scoreboard, I don't care how hard you played on the field.
That's right, yeah.
The scoreboard is a fact, and we have to own where we are now. And the reality is we have to be accountable for where we are right now, regardless of my kind of emotional, visceral feelings towards all the efforts that went into getting there. So I do think it's a dichotomy maybe a little bit earlier of, you know what, we have to be accountable. I have to be accountable to the team. I am the coach. I am the leader. We did not achieve our goal.
Right. Right.
That doesn't necessarily mean that you've got to then go to the other side. Because all that does is say, here's where we are. Now, what's the road going forward?
It's true.
Where you lean on hope and you say, what is the will and the way to move this thing forward? And do you have the will? And the only way you're going to demonstrate that is to own it and be 100%. We failed. I'm the leader. We failed. This is unacceptable. We're not going to look backwards. Maybe that's a good way to look at it. We'll take a couple of, but we're not going to spend time. We're going to now go forward.
Yeah.
So I do think there's a little split there between, you know, don't make excuses on the outcome. The outcome is the outcome. So there's no excuse that's going to explain that away. So key takeaways, own where we could improve. This is a fact and move forward. I think that you slip into what we don't like when you play the blame game and the excuse game.
Yeah.
And so I can see a one and a zero at that level. And maybe that's a split that's hard to distinguish, but I do think it's important. Now, if you have, to Jocko's point, if you have actions that led to that factual outcome that didn't meet the standard and weren't accountable.
Correct.
And I think you're going to spend a lot more time into the back, you know, into the background and hashing that out. And so neither one of those, whether it was good or bad leading to the outcome, changes the outcome. And so that's where I would draw the line of a one or a zero. You own it. You own it with your team. You ran the business. You ran the department. You ran the project. It failed. Like, there's no amount of explaining that away. So that's where I would draw it.
Yeah, so I think we can wrap it up with the final one that John talks about in Chapter 9 of High Road Leadership, which is leadership accountability. So we had personal accountability, we had team accountability, now we got leadership accountability. And it's in High Road Leadership. John has mentioned this many times in many of his talks and teachings. He talks about his interaction with John Wooden, Coach John Wooden from UCLA, one of the winningest basketball coaches. And one of the things that he talked about is when it comes to accountability as a leader, you are accountable to your team. And so in reality, you have to ask yourself as a leader, which is, how can I make my team better? No one else owns that aside from you as the leader. How can I make my team better? Because when John, in his conversations with John Wooden, was looking for this secret, as you talked about earlier, what's the one way, what's the one rule, what's the one process that if I follow that, say the right words, sprinkle the magic dust, it's all going to be great. And you know, John Wooden came back and said, it's all about you. It's about you challenging yourself to find a way to make your team better. That's your job as the leader, is to make the team better, to add value, to move them forward. Sometimes that's holding them accountable, right? Sometimes that is going to be showing a little bit of grace. But the bottom line, there's no one else who owns that accountability for the performance of the team currently and in the future than the leader itself. Your viewpoint?
I think that it brings to bear, or brings to mind, the difference in the type of leaders that say, if I had X, Y, and Z employee, X, Y, and Z player to play within my within my scheme and within my framework and within my structure, then we would win. And that's the reason we did not win, is they didn't fill their role, their accountability chart seat to the highest expectation. And I think that when you make that comment, you have certainly failed in leadership accountability. Because some of your greatest coaches, which you just mentioned quoting him, you will change your structure and your scheme and your framework to still achieve that ultimate outcome based off of the reality of the team you have there. And so if you're not putting them in the right roles, right seats on the bus, or you're not changing how you're attacking or executing the plan based off of the team that's on, that's there, because at some point that's the team you're going with, that's what you're going to battle with. That's a, to me, that is the difference in leadership accountability and owning it versus, you know, even team accountability or personal responsibility. You know, they can say, oh, well, I held accountable, I set a standard, this was the structure, you didn't meet it, therefore we lost. To me, that is not good leadership. Good leadership would be identifying, hey, I've got a weakness here, I may need to buttress that person, I may need to move this person here, and you change the way you go about execution, because at the end of the day, that rigidity, if it jeopardizes the outcome, you failed as a leader. If you didn't adjust in order to make sure the outcome was, then you certainly failed as a leader. And you could check every box in every leadership book in the world, but if you didn't pivot, that's 100% on you as a leader. So that that's where I draw the line. And you see a lot of successful coaches. We talk about a lot of successful leaders that have written a lot of famous books that were very dogmatic, and you will work this way, and this is the way it goes, and we will only hire these people. Well, I wouldn't call that good leadership. I would call it maybe good outcomes, but it's definitely not good leadership, and disposing of people like their widgets and tools and not taking into account the reality of the business or the people or your skills. Winning, despite what people say about a Belichick and some of these quarterbacks and some of these coaches that have won with all types of teams, with all types of schemes, with all types of superstars, to me that's much more impressive than here's the system, I'll fill the seats. If they don't fill the seats, I'll fire them.
Yeah, dream.
And if we don't have a good season, it's because that person didn't fill the role that was in my framework or my scheme. It's a way to do it. I'm not arguing it's not a way to do it. It's just not the way that I would call, you know, certainly not high road leadership.
Well, actually, what's interesting is what you just described about the leadership accountability, right? Trying to make their team better. You mentioned you got to do the best they can with what you got, a little bit one of our principles as well. But in doing so, you just demonstrated the four steps of accountability. Seeing it, owning it, hey, I'm the one who needs to fix this, solving it, coming up with a system, a motivation technique, whatever, and then actually doing it. So what you just described, trying to develop a good team from perhaps mediocre players, actually has just demonstrated the steps to accountability outlined in the Oz principle. See it, own it, solve it, do it.
Well, and it forces people to understand the dichotomy of leadership, because the structure that was perfectly laid out, perfectly executed, perfectly explained by any project management standard became the excuse.
Yeah.
And so this is exactly why Scott opened this up. The scale has to move back and forth. If you think you're going to just lean on all structure, again, there are examples. I certainly understand why the military does it and why in those situations it makes more sense. But they still have areas of the military where they don't do it. They have teams in the military they send into certain areas that are very fluid and flexible. But on a whole, you know, I understand that role and responsibility. But if your structure and your clarity and accountability, you know, charts and stuff are your excuse for failure, you still didn't hold yourself accountable. So I think it is a little bit of a dichotomy and an interesting thing to end on.
Excellent. Well, we'll end it there. Thank you, Chandler, for the discussion about standards and accountability. Thank you to our podcast listeners for joining us, The Powerhouse Perspective. If you weren't taking notes, there were three books that we talked about. The first was The Oz Principle. The second we talked about was The Way of the Shepherd. And then the final is High Road Leadership. So I highly recommend each of those three books. All of them were pretty quick read. So again, thank you for joining us on The Powerhouse Perspective, and we'll see you next time. Cheers.
Take care.